seagull. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. Welcome to Bicycle Talk. This is episode 415 to be broadcast on Wednesday, October 2nd, 2024 on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. If you missed my last week's episode, you can probably pick it up on my soon-to-be-updated Bicycle Talk YouTube channel, and hopefully you'll hear it there. There were some technical difficulties last weekend, and unfortunately last weekend's show was not broadcast at the station. They had a little problem there. Nor Franz, too. So anyway, welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, lovely Franz Storch. If you are watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to leave information to us and maybe even contribute more to the show, then please just comment right down here below. I don't know that I can really do much with you today because Franny's down in Florida. But anyway, you can always send me an email also at bicycletalk, the numeral one, at gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's Rant of the Week. Crosswalk alert. So I know it's pedestrian based, but you know, pedestrians and cyclists are both very vulnerable users. And what is with people who don't stop when you step into a crosswalk? That's my rant. Yes, under the current Connecticut pedestrian walking laws, drivers who fail to yield, slow, or stop their vehicle as necessary to pedestrians in crosswalks may receive fines up to $500. But then you go to the you go to the Connecticut page that you're referred to, and you take a look, and this is at the ct.gov page, and you look on this thing, and summary since 1929, pedestrians have had the right of way in crosswalks, blah 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 blah. So the court judges that the fines, if you're a pedestrian who violates the crosswalk in some way, which I don't know how that works because there's no longer a violation if you're in the crosswalk, but they say there's a $35 to $50 fine to the pedestrian for a misuse of highway. I don't know. Got me. And then the cars could be fined as much as $35 to $90. And yet this statement, which just came out, says $500. Okay, this is current. This is, I just Googled this morning to figure out what's going on here. And it, so, you know, it talks about the pedestrian generally has a right of way over all vehicles while at the curb or in the crosswalk. So why am I bringing this up? Because I was up in stores on Saturday for the downtown Mansfield celebration. And it's like a yearly celebration. I was there. I was working for our Food to Families program, and was also there. Bike Mansfield was there, which is really nice. My new registrar of voters, they were all there. So we've got we had a bunch of stuff going on. But I tried to cross the road twice, and cars wouldn't stop when I was standing in the crosswalk. Not only wouldn't they stop, they were flying. They were going super fast in a 25-mile-an-hour zone. And there's a big festival going on. What is wrong with people? Distracted drivers. Anyway, it doesn't seem like anybody out there is is safe when it comes to people driving vehicles, and it's just really maddening to me. But anyway, that's it. That's my rant of the week. I had to rant about that because, you know what? When you almost get hit by a car when you're standing in a crosswalk, it's a little alarming. And it makes you want to, you know, kind of take a look and see what the laws are. Well, the laws, according to the state of Connecticut, and according to this notification that I got, that you might receive a fine of $500 is not up to date. So my rant is also with the state of Connecticut. Please update your file, your website, whatever. You guys are so far off, it's not even funny. Let people know what's going on here. And take my suggestion, which I have been giving for years and years and years, and no one has taken hold of it yet, including bicycle organizations in this state, and put notifications in everyone's driver's license renewal or registration renewal about what the real laws are for bicycles and pedestrians on the roads today. Simple piece of paper goes into the envelope. Not difficult. I'll keep repeating this until someone gets a clue. But anyway, we'll talk a little bit more about this at other times on the show. On a positive side, let's go to the positive side. Okay, here's your positive side. The Worlds were this weekend. The Worlds were like unbelievable, as always. There's famous words that were stated, very famous words. There are a few famous words, and we will get to this later in the show. It was not planned. It was stupid. Famous words from the winner of the Men's World Championships. We'll get back to that. Let's see. On another positive side, Governor Newsom in California finally signs a complete streets bill. Finally, state law will require Caltrans to plan and build a transportation system for everyone who uses California roads. Yay. About time, eh? Anyway, it is California, by the way. I mean, probably more people ride bicycles and drive cars there than any other place in the United States. It is very car-centric in California. But it is also, because of weather, it's also very bike-centric there, too. So, anyway, we'll see what is going on there. I'll talk a little bit more about that in the show. Mechanical Minute and Ron's Tips of the Weeks. Okay, the week here. What do we got? Hey, Billy. Hey, Mark. How you guys doing? Should cyclists have mirrors? A simple misadjustment or shift in your direction could put you in serious danger. Cycling mirrors largely eliminate these problems. You can keep your head pointed straight, barely glancing away from the road, get a clear view of any traffic in the rear. So I wanted to talk again about mirrors. I love mirrors. I was such an old fuddy-duddy, geeky bike racer dude for so many years, and then I started using my bike a little bit more for commuting, and I also started using my bike a little bit more for basic transportation, and then the roads got ridiculous. And so when the roads got ridiculous, what happened? We just couldn't. I've lost my position here. We got crazy people driving their bicycles down the road. Crazy people, and so I just I couldn't deal with it anymore. So I started putting a mirror on my bike. And some people like to put mirrors on their. They like to put mirrors on their, my page isn't found. Isn't that terrible? That was here this morning. Anyway, they like to put mirrors on their eyewear, so you can do that. And then they also can sometimes put mirrors on their bikes in different places. You can put them on the end of your handlebars, put them on your handlebar up high like a motorcycle. You can do them any way you want, but I'm just feeling that the danger on the road has become a little more frightening. And so anyway, I am just looking to try to figure out a way to inform people about why I love my mirror. Why do I love my mirror? So here we go. I think I finally found this thing. So anyway, I found the site and it just had some really good information on it. And It is from a Cella Anatomica is the name of the site, and they talk about why cycling mirrors are essential for safety and how to use them. So, you know, my days of fast speeds and worry about the things that I put on my bike are way behind me, because as I was riding the other day, and I had not yet put a mirror on the particular bike I was riding. It was an e-bike, and my old e-bike, which I also converted over, by the way. That's kind of a cool thing. I put drop bars on my e-bike because I just don't feel right when I'm up here somewhere. It just doesn't feel right. But anyway, I like drop bars. I like to be able to change my positions on the handlebars. I like the position it puts me in when I'm riding my bike. I don't care whether it's a fast bike or a slow bike. It doesn't really matter. I just like drop bars. Drop bars just feel right to me. So I made a quick changeover, but I didn't put a mirror on. And of course, I'm riding it down the road and car comes up and I can't see the car because I don't have my mirror on. So there's a mirror on there now. That takes care of that problem. So if you're reluctant about this, think about it. And of course, I will add to this too, that I do use rear radar on my bike, which I have talked about endlessly on this show. I think rear radar is the answer. Mark says he uses a mirror all the time. However, it does negate the need for scanning. Looking back alerts drivers, makes eye contact. Yeah, you're right. It does make eye contact. You're absolutely right. I have a new method, Mark, which I will throw out there for you. When I'm riding my bike on the roads, especially out here in the quiet corner, we have a lot of back roads, and I will ride my bike now right out on the center line on the back road. Now, the traffic is light, so it's not really a big deal. But what happens is I will then see the car on my radar on my computer, because radar is the answer for safety on your bike, by the way. And as soon as I do, I then go over, which sort of communicates with the driver behind me that I know they're there, and I know that they're coming up behind me. And it seems to be working a lot better than the old turn around and look method. And if you're a skilled cyclist, like I know you are, and a lot of people that listen to the show, when you turn around and look, your bike still goes straight. Whereas those who are not as skilled on their bicycle and do not have that kind of expertise while they're riding their bike tend to turn their handlebars when they turn and look. So that's a no-no. That's a big-time no-no, because that gives you the weave, and that automatically tells the driver behind you that, oh my God, it's a bicycle ahead. I don't know what he's going to do. He's going to turn right into me, whatever. Riding that straight line is just such an important thing. But bicycle mirrors kind of eliminate a lot of those problems. So I think they're great. And mine are on my bike. I don't like the ones on my glasses, primarily because my vision in my left eye is not that good. So it's a little bit harder for me to see things with that. And I just never really got used to that. I tried it a couple of times. Just didn't really work for me. But they are, you know, apparently very good. Those that use them really, really like them. But I prefer to have it on my bike. It's my default position. and seems to work well. And I also find that I don't like to use a really big mirror because I find it obtrusive, and I have found my go-to mirror of all times, as I have tried all different mirrors that are out there, has been the Cat Eye BM45, and that mirror is, it's very small, it goes into your bar end. And it's real glass, so you get a very, very clear view of what's behind you. That's just my personal favorite. There are others out there that I know people love, and there are ones that are more aerodynamic to fit into your handlebar. There's all types of mirrors. But the mirror is the thing. I like the mirror. I think the mirror is I think the mirror is more essential now than it has ever been, with the amount of distracted drivers that are driving down the road, and the fact that you at least can see, you know, you can see the cars coming, and maybe see that they're like coming over to get you. They're not really trying to get you. They just don't pay attention to where they're going. So that's where the problem is here. Yeah, Billy, I love rear radar. I agree. It rocks. It totally rocks. Rear radar is possibly the best answer to this that we have had in years. And there's a lot of other things that I'm seeing out there now, too. I'm also seeing these weird things like lights that actually light up like brake lights when you're slowing down, that it detects the fact that you're slowing very quickly, and it puts a brake light on for the cars coming up behind you or the riders coming up behind you. That's a little weird, but you know what? I've never really, I haven't tried it yet, so I don't have a positive result or a critique on that. Mark says, old road gear mirror that goes over the brake hoods is my favorite. Remember those? Those were so cool. You put it over the brake hood, and then you took a Velcro strap and wrapped it around, and boop, there it was. It was right on the hood. It was in a perfect position. I don't think anybody makes those anymore. Mark, do some research for me. Let me know if those are still available. I know Road Gear is long gone. They got bought out by Bell Sports, and then Bell Sports been bought out by who knows who, and, you know, it's like, it's the ever, ever confusing bicycle industry. But yeah, that was a cool mirror. I do remember that. That was really, really cleverly laid out, and it just sat right on the brake hood, kind of fit on there pretty snug, and then you took a Velcro strap and strapped it around, and you had like this great mirror that was very easy to move from one bike to another bike, especially if you're a drop bar guy like me, and you know, because I do like my drop bars. So yeah, and once you start using a mirror on one bike, you've got to have a mirror on all your bikes. It really, really, really works well. I just think that it says here, don't knock it until you try it. I agree with that. I think that this is something you should definitely look at. It's probably one of the best equipment changes you can make on your bike, and if it offends you to have a mirror on your bicycle, then I don't know what to tell you. Don't complain about traffic, that's all, you know, and ride someplace where it's really, really quiet, where you don't have to worry about the mirror. But I think that the mirror is way up there on the list. So anyway, that is my my mechanical minute and tip of the week. We are going to move on to other things now. And oh, there it was, right there in front of me. All right, let's move on. So next thing on my list, we go into something called bike share. So bicycle transit system, all right, beefs up to compete with Lyft after acquiring B-Cycle. There's a new acquisition that's being finalized next month. Bicycle Transit will operate in nearly 30 cities, more than three times as much as its publicly traded competition. So this is kind of cool. Bike Share Operations provider Bike Transit Systems is acquiring B-Cycle from Trek in a bid to compete with Lyft and become the largest bike share provider in the country in terms of number of cities served. Bicycle Transit's relationship with B-Cycle goes way back nearly a decade. The firm uses B-Cycle bikes for the three bike share systems it operates in Los Angeles, Philadelphia, and Las Vegas. When new acquisition finalizes next month, Bicycle Transit will add to its portfolio B-Cycle's operations in 10 cities and equipment provider deals in 15 others. Cities with bike share typically farm out management and operations to outside vendors. Lyft has been the biggest player on the scene, running the country's largest systems in New York, Boston, Chicago, and Washington, D.C. The new acquisition gives Bicycle Transit a larger geographic footprint. By combining the manufacturing operations and public facing brand, Bicycle Transit operates systems that will use fewer subcontractors than Lyft, which has bike manufacturing, software, and product development under its purview, but still contracts out to third parties for day-to-day operations. So we shall see how this works out. But the fact is that there's competition in the bike share business, we'll call it, because it is a business. And this is great. This is great. I mean, if I lived in a city, and which that'll probably not happen. My son loves the city. I don't love the city. If I lived in a city, I would certainly have a bike share. You know, they, I guess you get like an app and you can, you know, you just like, you know, Zipcar and all those others, you can just like, you know, app yourself into a bike and then it will be ridden and then returned back to a rack that is one of their racks, and they have a GPS system on it so they can locate the bike and they know where it went and what you did with it. And you pay like, I don't know, monthly fees. I'm not even really sure how it works. If anybody knows, that would be cool to hear. But the last I had heard, but it was many, many years ago, it was running on a yearly fee, and then you just had an app which basically ran everything. It was way, way, way less expensive than owning a bicycle. So that's kind of cool. That's kind of a cool thing. So anyway, that's what's going on here. So we're looking at a big competitor coming in to the bike share system, and you know, we'll see how that works out. I'm thinking now that if I, you know, my sister and I were just chatting back and forth a couple days ago about the possibility of going down out to Chicago in November to see my son. I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but anyway, it's being talked about, and you know, that would be the thing to do. It's just use their bike share system to get around. Makes sense. Makes a lot more sense. Anyway, you don't have to bring your bike with you. You don't have to talk about, you know, the cost of transportation to get the bike there and all that. So it's just kind of an interesting operation and a really cool way to get yourself around the city. I know Franny went out a few years back. She went out to Portland to visit some friends in Portland, Oregon. She didn't rent a car. She rented a bike. And that's all she used to get around. She used mass transportation and the bike to get herself around, which is great. Great way to do it. So it's kind of cool. You know, you just got to reset your brain to rethinking transportation as you know it. And that's where you go. So, what else here? I have another little thing on shared bike and scooter trips, because they're soaring by 20% in a single year. This last year, they went up 20%. So why are the U.S. systems shutting down, and what will it take to keep the revolution rolling? Yeah, in the talk of this other company coming in and doing a bike share, yeah, there's other companies that are pulling out of it. So we're experiencing a historic surge in micro-mobility trips, but without more public subsidy, that boom could easily go bust, okay? So this is another one of those things where, you know, the the socialist network is a good thing. We pay for our roads through socialism, so why don't we just do the same thing with other forms of transportation besides cars and trucks? Yeah. Yeah, that's it. That's the statement right there, is that it would be really, really nice to have alternative transportation subsidized, as it is basically being subsidized with regular transportation by building the roads that you ride your bike on. I had this discussion with someone one day, and they said, you're sort of a socialist. Yeah, okay, so I'm sort of a socialist. You're absolutely right. I am. I believe in seeing tax dollars come back to the people that are paying the taxes. I think it's a good thing, and yeah, okay. And I believe in somehow helping us out. And now that I am old, I am on Social Security, and I am on Medicare, and I got to tell you, it's like a dream come true. I got to tell you, it is way better than the alternative that I had when I was self-employed and buying my own insurance and just nightmarish. Anyway, so when someone who is, let's say, on the other side of the political spectrum that I'm on, they call me a socialist, I go, well, you are too. And they go, well, no, I'm not. And I said, well, you drive a car, right? Or you drive a truck, right? Well, yeah, of course I do. Well, where do you think those roads come from? And they go, well, it comes from gas tax. And you guys on bicycles, you don't pay gas tax. I said, you're right. And on my bicycle, I don't pay gas tax, but I do pay federal taxes, which is really where the money comes from for the roads. The gas tax has nothing to do with it at all, period. Any state, look it up. That's the way it works. They use gas tax for other things in your state. So if you have the misconception that cyclists do not pay taxes, therefore do not belong on the roads, you have a very major misconception. But anyway, let's move on. I'm ranting. Ranting again. There we go. Okay. So micromobility is a big thing, because if you take a look, I have this great chart in front of me here that you guys can't see, but I'll explain it to you. And I'll show you that in 2017, there were shared micromobility ridership in the US and Canada was at 42 million. In 2018, it went from 44.5 million and jumped all the way up to 92 million. In 2019, we're approaching COVID here, okay? It went from 49.5 million from previous times, okay? And it went up to 147 million. 2020, it dropped down 37.5 million to 73 million, but it was still, that was COVID year, so that was kind of a big thing. And 2021, 57 million up to 125 million. 2022, 68 million up to 131 million. And 2023, as of last year, 81 million bikes and a total of 157 million. There were like 69 million dockless scooters. I mean, wow, unbelievable. So yeah, micromobility is a big deal, and it's getting bigger each year. So last year was a record-breaking year. I'm sure I just read a piece about 20% increase this year. So I think that we're on record to break that again this year. And this is, you know, I mean, when you take a look at the fact that public transportation fare increases will result in ridership losses, which is really a problem. That's really unfortunate. Once again, my socialist in me tells me that maybe we should be subsidizing other forms of transportation besides just cars and trucks. And that would be kind of a good idea, but, you know, silly me to come up with something that makes sense. You know, the bike is really the answer to so many of the problems of congestion and inner city problems, and it just changes everything if we just get people on bikes. When I talk to police officers who police on their bikes, they say, game changer, total game changer. They have a lot more respect in their communities because they're out on a bicycle. They're, yes, they're in a little bit more vulnerable position, but they're also not in as intimidating a position, and they get a much better read about what's going on the streets. So the bicycle is really the answer to all the problems in the world. That's why I'm Bicycle Talk. That's why I talk about this all the time, because I do believe that we could change a lot just by thinking differently about our transportation and including more bicycle-oriented transportation and pedestrian transportation in that's safe. So anyway, moving on. Let's see, what else do I have here? So that's my bike share piece. Bicycle racing. Yeah, we're gonna go there. We kind of had, you know, I know Billy is listening in, and it was like no big surprise to either of us who won the world championships in the men's race this year. It's also not a big surprise who won the women's world championships, but who was with her is a relatively outstanding thing. So I'm going to start with the women's worlds first. It was this past weekend. It was on Sunday. And it was this past weekend. And so, Lottie Capecchi. Yep, she's just amazing. She is, again, the world champion. So that's 2 years in a row now, I think 2 years in a row. And do we have hers? Yeah. So, she sprinted to a world championship victory. She was the Belgian defending champion, came back after being dropped to win as, Puck Patrice took the U23 title. Okay. So, she holds on to the rainbow jersey just ahead of American Chloe Dygert and Elisa Longo Borghini from Italy. So that was the women's road race, and it was very exciting. It came down to sprint finish, as a lot of times it does work that way with them. And there goes my page bouncing all over the place again. So, It was certainly fun to watch. I do have a subscription to a site that allowed me to watch both highlights and also the race as it was going on. So I am a victim of getting sucked into the television set yesterday to watch the worlds, and it was fun to watch. But anyway, It was a solid race, and it was a hard circuit, very, very hard circuit, a lot of little punchy climbs, and we kind of knew that going into it, but, you know, that's basically what happened. So Lottie took that, and then we're going to go back here, and come on, where's my site here? And we'll go back to the men's race. Well, it is no major surprise that obviously the best riders in the world show up to do this, and there was obviously one rider who was out for his Triple Crown this year, and that was Tadej Pogačar. And he cemented his place in the pentathlon of cycling with a historic victory in the World Championship road race, securing the coveted rainbow jersey for the first time ever in his career. I watched a couple of interviews afterwards. He's very emotional about it. It was not just any win. It was a solo attack from 100 kilometers out, a feat that harkens back to the golden age of cycling, a time when the likes of Eddie Merckx ruled the roads. The victory stands as a monument to his dominance and might be just one of his greatest performances to date. Pogačar, now the reigning champion, is in almost every meaningful race he's contested, seems to be racing not just against his rivals, but against history itself. And with every pedal stroke, something remarkable happens. And in Zurich, what unfolded was the crowning of what may be the most outstanding season in modern cycling. Even more impressive, he still has Lombardia to cap off his historic campaign. Yeah, well, we'll see about that. We'll see. It puts him in a very elite club. There's only two others. Eddie Merckx and Stephen Roche are the only ones who have managed to capture two of the grand tours and also the worlds in the same year. So that's the only thing that separates Pogacar from Merckx and Roche is the way that in which he has won. The seeds of an incredible 2024 season were planted long before Zurich in April. On April 21st, 2024, Pogacar took a victory at the Liège-Bastogne-Liège, a race that saw him destroy his rivals with astonishing ease. That win, coming so early in the season, was a warning shot to the rest of the peloton that this was going to be his year. Liège was merely the first of many major wins that would follow. Fast forward to the World Championships and Pogacar's attack 100 kilometers from the finish was a move straight out of the pages of cycling folklore. His rivals, including Olympic champion Remco Evenepoel and defending champion Matthew Vanderpoel, were left stunned. With 50 kilometers to go, the gap between Pogacar and the rest of the field began to widen, and by the finish he crossed the line 30 seconds clear of the chasing group. There were some great comments that were made. So anyway, he says in an interview, they said, so, you know, was that your plan to go at 100 kilometers to go? Was that your plan? And his statement was, it was not planned. It was stupid. Famous words from the winner of the men's world championships. And Remco Evenepoel quoted, I thought it was a suicide attempt. He was left stunned by Tadej Pogacar's brilliance in Zurich. So that's kind of a big deal. And he's an amazing rider. Gotta give him credit. You know, we watch him very carefully, and I'm sure everyone is watching him very carefully, and you know in what ways I'm talking about. So I am hoping that this was yet another very clean race, and, you know, we will move on from that point. I am going to also bring up here, where is this Triple Crowns here? I had this great little piece here. That I had found, and it's all about the other people that have been here. Okay, the Triple Crown of cycling has only been achieved twice, once by Eddie Merckx, who else, in 1974, and by Stephen Roche in 1987. The feat of winning the Giro and the Tour and the World Championships is considered to be the pinnacle of what is possible in cycling, yet it is now considered most impossible to attempt even the Grand Tour double required to set it off, let alone the Grand Tour and the Worlds. So, on that basis, the peloton needs other challenges, more feats that they can attempt to find their niche in history. So there it is. What can they do? No one's ever won. I don't think anyone's ever won all three Grand Tours. I think that's something that has just been just really, really difficult. But there are others who have done double, both the Vuelta and the Tour, or the Giro and the Vuelta. There's definitely others. So we can go down the list here. Fausto Coppi, Giro and the Tour, 1949 and 1952, twice. Jacques Anquetil, Vuelta Tour in 1963 and the Giro Tour in 1964. Boy, he was going good. Eddie Merckx, Tour and the Giro in 1970, in 1972, and the Giro and the Vuelta in 1973. Next on the list, Bernard Hinault, the Tour and the Vuelta in 1978, the Giro and the Tour in 1982 and 1985. And Giovanni Battaglin, The Giro and the Vuelta in 1981, Miguel Indurain, the Giro and the Tour in 92 and 93, Marco Pantani, Giro and the Tour in 1998. I liked Marco Pantani. He was fun to watch. Alberto Contador, the Giro and the Vuelta in 2008. So there's your doubles right there. But there's only three riders who have accomplished getting the Triple Crown. So not an easy thing to do. So we go down the list here, and so we go and we take a look at Jacques Anquetil. Okay, he won the Tour in 1957, 1961, 1962, 1963, and 1964. Boy, was he going well. And then he won the Giro in 1960, 1964, and the Vuelta in 1963. That is a lot of wins. That is a whole bunch of wins. Felice Gimondi, great Italian rider. Tour in 1965, the Giro in 67, 69, and 76. Eddie Merckx. Here we go. Hang on. This is a long list now. So if you're keeping track here, you want to fact check me on this, you'd be more than go right ahead, please. But Eddie Merckx won the Tour de France in 1969, 1970, 1971, 1972, and 1974. Whew. Wow. Busy guy. The Giro, he won in 1968, 1970, 1972, 1973, and 1974. Keeping track of this because, you know what, there are a lot of overlaps there with the Tour. And then he won the Vuelta in 1973. And I think that was about the time that Eddie Merckx said, you know what, I've won everything. At that time, he held the hour record, which was pretty amazing. He got that in Mexico City. He did it at elevation on the track in Mexico City because supposedly it was faster to do it at 5,000 feet or 6,000 feet or whatever Mexico City is. So anyway, pretty amazing. And then along comes Bernardino. He wins the Tour in 78, 79, 81, 82, and 85. And amidst some controversy. But anyway, go back to the old Greg LeMond days. The Giro in 1980, 82, and 85, and the Vuelta in 78 and 83. And then Alberto Contador won the Tour in 2007 and 9, and the Giro in 2008, the Vuelta in 2008 and 2010. So, no one's ever tried this one. It's so hard. Winning all three Grand Tours in 1 year will probably never be done, but it's nice to dream of. Andy Schleck had done it virtually. That doesn't count. I'm sorry, I'm not going there. The Grand Podium, Grand Slam. This is something that not everyone can accomplish, but there are some amazing riders out there that have done some amazing things over the years. You take a look at Jacques Anquetil. We're going back to, we've already talked to him about this. 8 Grand Tour wins, 13 podiums. Felice Gimondi, 5 Grand Tour wins, 12 podiums. Eddie Merckx, 11 Grand Tour wins, 12 podiums. Bernardino, 10 Grand Tour wins and 12 podiums. And it just goes on down the line. But as you can see, there are no American riders on this list because it's something that's really, really, really hard to, and I'm looking to see if I missed anything here, but nope, I did not. So winning these and doubling up in the same year is not an easy feat. And you think about it, and you think about, you know, 20 to 22 days of racing with 2 rest days involved, break it up. It's just, it's got to be so hard on the human body. I just can't imagine it. And then you get 30 or 40 days off, and then you got to go do it again. That's not easy. The world is actually the easy race because it's only a day. 240 kilometers, but it's only a day. So, you know, in that respect, then the Worlds is actually, you know, that is like kind of the icing on the cake if you can pull off a Worlds win. But anyway, I was just, I watched three or four different videos that were made of Tadej Pogačar. And, you know, he really wanted this. He wanted this one bad. Of all the things he's won, he seems to have really wanted this one. So that was kind of cool to see. On a not so positive note, there's a couple things that I have to mention here. And there was a Swiss rider. Her name was Muriel Führer. And she was 18 years old, and she had a really, really nasty crash on really wet roads in the World Junior race. And she was airlifted, and she died after a very heavy crash in the Women's Junior race 2 days before the 2 days before the men's and women's Grand Tours. So, really sad. There was a moment of silence before the start of all the remaining races, as well as muted podium celebrations. The other person that we lost in the bicycle racing world was Bas van Bell, the Dutch rider who unexpectedly died at the age of 24. The Dutch Cycling Association announced the tragic news on their website. They said van Bell's passing was unexpected. That's all they said. Their statement said, "It is with great sadness and sorrow that KNW learned of the unexpected passing of Bas van Bell." So this bicycle racing thing, it's not a real safe sport. I give you a clue out there. Moms and dads, if you're listening in, you want to get your kids into bicycle racing, I would, you know, have a serious talk with them about it. It's not an easy thing. And you know, I know NFL players are dropping like flies these days. I mean, they're now changing the protocol now on the helmets once again because of the severe head injuries. And you know, there's a very interesting thing the NFL is doing. They have a practice helmet. They have basically it's a cushion that goes over the top of their regular helmet. And they use them in practice because they don't want to get a concussion because they want to be able to play on game day. Some of the players are actually wearing them on game day also. That's very interesting because of the, you know, the unbelievable damage that the head injuries do over time. So anyway, yeah, it's not a very safe sport in many ways, and yet it really is in many other ways. And there are other sports that have their problems too. It can happen. So anyway, we're sad to see people go, especially when they're 18 years of age and just getting started, or 24 years of age and just getting started in their careers. And it's really, really sad. But it is there is a high risk value that goes along with this bicycle racing game. So just so you know. Okay, I'm going to move on from this, and we're going to go on to industry news. This is interesting. There is the Pros Closet, which is a place that was set up, I think, now 18 years ago. I had this in here somewhere. Let's see, right here. Yeah. It's going to close in October. This is from Louisville, Colorado. The Pros Closet, which started out in its founder's VW bus, evolved into an eBay store and became a used bike and component e-commerce giant. It's going to close in October after 18 years. TBC issued a short news release Thursday announcing the decision. Like a lot of companies in the industry, TBC has struggled since the post-COVID bike boom last year. It had two rounds of layoffs and recently has been offering huge discounts on its website, which is now has a going out of business sale announcing on announcement on the homepage with 75% off site-wide. Need a bike? Anyway, this has been an extraordinary chapter in the world of cycling. We're incredibly grateful to everyone who's been a part of it, said CEO Jonathan Czar. Zarja, for our dedicated team, to loyal riders and industry partners. Your support allowed us to grow and create a lasting impact. While this is the end of the road for TPC as it operates today, we are proud of what we've accomplished together. They said since its founding, it has helped over 160,000 customers find their perfect ride and have sold more than 46,000 bikes. The quote is, it's been a hell of a ride, but we couldn't be more thankful to our customers, employees, and vendors who made this journey possible. So this, if you're not familiar with what the Pros Closet was, it was originally sort of set up as a, it was set up for the bike racers, especially like professional bicycle racers who were given bikes. And at the end of the season, if they were changing to another sponsor or whatever, and there was, it was not in their contract to give the bike back, they could sell them on the Pros Closet. So a lot of transactions went on there. Plus, then a lot of people in the amateur scene got into, you know, buying and selling their bikes on the Pros Closet, and it was just a, it was a convenient place. And they had they had the ability to not only sell bicycles, but they were also selling accessories too. And it's kind of an interesting thing. I mean, we, when I was racing my bike, we used to get merchandise at the end of a race. And sometimes you'd get, you know, a pair of cycling shoes that were certainly not your size. They were just something that was donated. And you'd be walking around the parking lot going, I got a pair of size 46s here. Anybody need 46 shoes? And trying to get some quick cash for them before you left the race. And if you couldn't do that, then you had to go to other means of trying to get rid of them, which in my case was to bring them back to the bike shop and try to sell them off there. But not everybody had that luxury. And so, you know, you would end up with inventory of, you know, things you want in a race that you can't use. And it wasn't, there was no marketplace on Facebook. There was no eBay, there was no Craigslist. It was a long time ago. So anyway, that's what the whole idea was behind the Pros Closet, and it looks like they are not going to be with us any longer. So off they go. I'm gonna go right into my events page, because I've got some things coming up that I want to talk about that fall into events. And this weekend coming up, I'll be at a very special event, and it's called the Berkshire Harvest Taste Series Appetizer on October 5th, 2024 in Pittsfield, Mass. It is part of the new Farm to Fork Fitness group that is that has basically taken over Renegade Sports Farm to Fork Fondo. Tyler sold the event. Tyler will be there. He definitely will be there. I will be there. And of course, the two new owners will be there too. So it's kind of a cool thing. And it's up in outside of Pittsfield, Massachusetts. And there's different rides for different people. And depending on, you know, what distances you're ready to do. And so anyway, that's coming up this weekend, and I will be up there, which will be kind of fun. So they gave me a shout out just a week or so ago, and just double checking, make sure I was going to be there, and I'm going to be there for sure. So Peddling Ron will be there with his radio voice, and I'm not sure what else I'll have me be doing this weekend when we're coming up. But anyway, it's exciting. It's going to be fun. There's a different energy, a new energy, and you know, the Farm to Fork Fondo goes on. It will continue over the years, and I can't wait, because I'm going to basically have dinner with them on Friday night and get to meet one of the new owners. One of them I know very well because I've worked with him for years. But the other one I am not as familiar with. So we'll get a little bit more of an insight about what their vision is for next year. It's been a very, very popular event. So hopefully it will continue that, and that'll be a good thing. Project Mayhem Cyclocross Series. Yeah, that's the one that I'm involved with Mansfield Hollow Cyclocross. I was the season opener this year. And then we had the next race was on September 14th, which was at Haddam Neck. And then the next one was on September 22nd in New Haven. Well, there's one coming up this weekend on October 6th, also in Newtown, Connecticut. So here we go. That will be our fourth of seven races in the Project Mayhem Cross Series. On October 20th, there will be a race in Portland, Connecticut. November 17th, Wallingford, Connecticut. And December 1st, the last one, which will be in Guilford, Connecticut. So that's Project Mayhem Cyclocross. Mischief, Harmony, and Cyclocross. Fun stuff. Anyway, I will also be at yet more Lime Rock Park on October 13th for the Lime Rock Park Epic, which is out in Litchfield County, and it's a gravel event. It's a gravel fondo, which has a 53-mile course, 68-mile course with 14 gravel sections, five of which will be timed, two rest stops. The Explorer, which is a 53-mile course with 3,600 feet in elevation and 10 gravel sectors, four of which will be timed and two rest stops. And the Express, which is an 18-mile route with 1,100 feet of elevation, two gentle dirt road sectors. I think that that's actually been changed. I think that might be up to like 25 miles, but I can't remember exactly. I am going to be there too. I'll be doing announcing, and also I believe I am sweeping the shorter ride too. But anyway, finishing points. So when was the last time you were in a crosswalk and in fear of your life? Just about the last time I was in a crosswalk, I was in fear of my life. Even the pedestrians are being tormented by the distracted speeding drivers. Why are we driving these bigger vehicles? I don't get it. I don't get it. So how about the Worlds? Was that exciting? That was exciting. And lots of good local riding coming up on the weekends. So 2024, more miles, ride to commute to work around town, better fitness, or simply enjoying the bike rides that you take more by slowing down and smelling the roses. My style. I'll say it again, it won't be my last time. Get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and the lack of places to safely ride your bike, and just ride your bike. There you go. Beautiful. Consider parking your car for one day and ride your bike instead. You might just surprise yourself. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensees of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, lovely Dr. Fran Storch. She's down in Florida. Hi, Mom. If you are watching on Facebook Live, feel free to comment, or you can send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. If you'd like to contribute information to the show, drop me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. This is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep that rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thank you so much for listening. I will see you next week. Get on your bikes and ride!